Welcome to the Fuller Monday Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Monday, the 26th of November, recording slightly later than usual at 10:18 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. It's been a busy day for me, too much admin stuff, but we've got Owen back here today. Very welcome, coming back from the chart seminar, which he talks about in his copy. Okay, now, so, what can we say is going on here in these markets today? Well, in the Asian markets, we had the Philippines and actually the ASEAN sector doing quite well overall, but it's been the Philippines that are very much in the pole position here, so that's very much, what should we describe it as, unchanged. And what I think is quite interesting is that, remember, on Friday we had that big upward dynamic in Taiwan. Well, that was extended today, a smaller gain, not surprisingly, but it also occurred on a gap. So that just does provide further evidence to me that that market is has certainly bottomed and is going to be appreciating from here. Now, that hope I'm not saying that prematurely, because it may be troubled by the underperformance of China still. And although China's up above the key day reversal lows that it had seen, when was it, last Thursday, it's not extending, or I think it was Wednesday, it's not extending the overall move to the upside. And I think it really does need to do that relatively soon to really be convincing in terms of signaling that China is once again finding support where it has previously over the years. I think that's going to happen, but I confess I'll heave a sigh of genuine relief when I see the evidence that it is happening. Okay, what else to mention here? In the European stock markets, now we had modest declines, looks like across the boards here, but they really are modest in that most of them are a half a percent or less even. And Europe had a very good week last week. We had some quite sharp and encouraging rallies overall. Now, Wall Street was soft for pretty much the entire day, but it did pick up towards the close. So what I'm saying is that it narrowed its losses, and actually the NASDAQ closed to the upside, which is quite impressive. That might have had something to do with Apple, which had another day of good gains in here today. So there's no doubt in my mind that Apple hit an important low last week, and it is extending that recovery. Now, let's see, the S&P only closed down 2.86 points. It's 0.2 of a percentage, so not much down. It clawed back most of the decline. And the Dow, which had been down over 100 points at one stage, it's only down 42 points, or 0.33 of a percent. So that's on top of the very good gains. Wall Street had an outstanding week last week. So I regard this as just a hopefully quiet consolidation overall. But there are issues. Of course, people are talking every day about the fiscal cliff. That's the main distraction here, with people trying to determine what's actually going to happen with this and how the lobbying is going to go and so on. Well, we can only guess on this. None of us actually know for certain, but I think we can make an informed guess, and that is that neither the president and the Democrats, who have the power, or the Republicans, including some of those, well, absolutely no taxes and digging their heels in and so on, they're not going to want to take the rap here for contributing to a significant setback to the U.S. economy. And that's common sense. And I think it's also patriotism, in that whatever the politics, I think all of those people, and however daft and crazy and loony they seem on some of the fringe issues, well, this is a European perspective I'm expressing. So cut me a little allowance there, the Americans who think I've gone over the top on that. No offense, no offense intended. But the point I was going to make is that I would say that every single one of those people in the House of Representatives is a genuine patriot, no matter how diverse their opinions actually are. And as patriotic Americans, they're going to be believers in the potential and the power of the U.S. economy, and they're going to want to see it do well. So, how do you do that? Well, you come up with an acceptable agreement in terms of the fiscal cliff, and that's not actually all that difficult. And I expect them to do it, and I expect markets to be pleased about the result, and I hope they'll do it sooner rather than later. I don't think there's a whole lot to be gained from last-minute brinkmanship on this, and I think it would be disappointing if they sort of came up with sort of a partial compromise, in other words, push the problem well into the new year. I think what we need is a firm bipartisan agreement, and there may be some of the finer details which need to be ironed out next year so that we're not making too many hasty decisions, or they aren't making too many hasty decisions before the actual deadline. But I think this is a potential difficulty, and that I'm counting on it to bring out the best in them and to resolve this without a crisis or brinkmanship. And if they don't, well, they're certainly not going to be reelected, so that would be perhaps that would concentrate the minds as well. So, let's say that's correct, and we get a decent agreement on this and then move forward. It'll be another big uncertainty removed from the scene. And you will have noticed that over the last many months this year, we've seen several quite big uncertainties largely removed, or at least put in a workable phase. And I would put the European economy in that position, and it's reflected in the share prices that we actually see there, and the fact that we're not hearing the word crisis, crisis, crisis all the time. You know, we aren't biting our nails in fear that Europe's about to explode and go into some far-ranging meltdown, far-ranging in the sense of all the collateral damage that that it would occur. So that's a sort of a roundabout way of me saying, you know, this is not an overall bad environment in here that we're dealing with, and I think that's reflected by the relative firmness that we've seen in most stock markets. And I think that's likely to continue here. But you know, let's see if we get any kind of big downward dynamics, then we'll have to reassess. But I look for this rally to continue in here right now. Now, what else to mention that's potentially important? Let's talk about bonds. Because I did get a number of emails in, and I haven't been able to address any of those emails today, but I certainly hope to at least start on them tomorrow. And thanks for your comments, incidentally, on that whole sector as discussed. But with the bond situation, I thought it was important to get out the message ahead of what I expect to be a bursting bubble. And that burst is going to occur at some point next year, probably. Maybe it gets extended a little bit longer. I would be quite surprised if it burst during the remainder of this year, because we've still got the QE programs in place. We do not have the inflation flaring up at this stage. So I think we'll continue with the environment that we actually see. But I also wanted to just to try to prepare people for what I think is the inevitability, and I'll repeat that, the inevitability of a bursting bond bubble in the future. And as I said a moment ago, quite possibly at some stage next year, although again I don't think that this is something that's likely to be happening in January, but maybe it won't happen for a number of months, but it is going to happen. All these bubbles do eventually burst, and even when they happen or occur in our most wondrous equity price apple, which seemed to be in a zone of its own, and well, in fact, it was. But the more overextended these markets get, the more certain they are to burst. And Apple's bubble bursting, I think, is a minor development. Hopefully, that will be correct. But the bursting of this bond market bubble, pumped up by all of this QE over the last few years, is likely to be serious. Now, I can't write you a detailed game plan in terms of how that will all evolve, because we really haven't been here before. I'm not that smart to be able to make all that up in advance, and I don't think anybody else can either, because I think it'll be very emotional. Some of it may be quite irrational, but I think that people who just accept this environment and think that it's more or less going to go on forever, either because they want to make a little bit more money in that run, or because they believe some of the self-serving hype that people always talk in the latter stages of bubbles. And of course, the people who are taking the biggest risks of all look like heroes up until the day the bubble actually bursts. Those are all the things that I don't want Fuller Money subscribers to get wrapped up in at this stage. And I did have a question saying, well, should we be going short in here? And my quick answer is no, not yet. Certainly, because remember, bubbles are very profitable. They remain very profitable until the day they burst. So will we want to be going short these bond markets after the bubble bursts? Yes. But I certainly don't want to be doing it ahead of the signs that those bubbles are actually bursting, because that could be quite expensive. And indeed, and I say this as a point against myself, it's been easy to get a little overexcited here. I did this earlier in the year, and to open a short position and lose money. And I feel foolish as I look back on that, that I was sucked in because we saw a small downward reaction. I thought these things are overvalued. Let's go in and short it. And they went down for another day or two or whatever. I can't remember precisely, and then surged higher. So again, I'm telling myself, not just you, I'm telling myself, don't go in and short these bonds until we have some evidence that the bubble is actually going to burst. Okay, don't want to overstate the case now. Two interesting things here. Mark Carney, the very impressive head of the Canadian Central Bank, he has been appointed by George Osborne to take over the Bank of England. Now, there's going to be a lull here before that actually happens, and I don't think it's before June of next year. But I had seen his name mentioned. Fuller Money is a fan of Mark Carney. You'll find four articles on him and quoting it, well, or four items in the archive. The subscribers archive mentioning him and quoting some of his comments and policies. But I'll just summarize it by saying he's someone that both Owen and I have admired greatly in recent years. And so I think he's one of the smartest and most level-headed central bankers around. So I think that's very good for the UK. And I think that plenty of other people are going to feel the same way. As a UK citizen, I'm absolutely delighted. And I think it will be a very important appointment. Now, the other one, and I have to concentrate to get this pronunciation correct. The other one is Marco Annunziata. I think that's how you pronounce it. Please forgive me if I've messed it up. But he is the chief economist at GE. Now, he is someone who's known to Fuller Money. You'll find some references to him also in the internet. And incidentally, I think I got the number sequence. I think I mentioned that there were four items by Mark Carney. I think it's actually quite a bit more. I think it might be 11, actually, and that we actually have four referring to Marco Annunziata. Now, hugely intelligent guy, and he is, I think his title is it chief economist? Yes, chief economist at General Electric GE. And he's talking about industrializing the internet. Now, this is just an unbelievably exciting area, and it's coming even faster than I expected, which is why I'm not repeating myself in this discussion so far. But basically, the internet's been mostly about communication between people, obviously, and as such, it's had a hugely profound effect on the lives and careers of most of us. But now the internet is embarking on its second huge advance, which is monitoring and analyzing the performance of increasingly sophisticated machines. In other words, what they're now doing is putting intelligent software in the form of miniature and wireless sensors, putting these into machines in the various different sections which deal with all the crucial moving parts. And then those little wireless sensors are putting daily information up in that great internet cloud, where it can be analyzed to show areas of stress and other problems before serious difficulties occur. Now, you think of the importance of this. Let's take a dramatic example. Forgive me for the dramatic example, but I know it's late in the evening, or at least it is for me. And so let's take an airplane engine and a bug that's developing in an airplane engine. Now, we don't currently we have sophisticated means of dealing with this, but nothing like what these miniature wireless sensors are actually going to be able to give us in terms of intelligent feedback. So when something is starting to go seriously wrong, it can cause a lot of damage to these machines before it's actually spotted. You get some sort of breakdown, and that's very expensive. And in the case of the aircraft that I mentioned, it may well cause result in an accident. And what these little sensors are going to be doing is, again, providing back daily information, and the moment something seems to be a little bit awry, it'll be assessed, and so really it will vastly increase the ability of mechanics to other people who are monitoring the performance of all these machines to spot trouble before it becomes serious. Now, just think about the cost savings alone in that process being able to go in and tweak a machine before serious breakdowns actually occur. Let alone any kind of horrendous accidents. So this is hugely important, and it won't just be, or it'll start, I think, probably with the most important and big machines, and GE is certainly involved in this. But the potential benefits from effectively embedding intelligence into other machines and also services, and even people over the very long term is absolutely enormous. How would it affect people? Well, you might have something in there that's monitoring the way old chaps like me are performing on the various medications that they're receiving or been receiving. I could have used one of those. Sorry to personalize it so much, because I've certainly dropped the statins and some of the other medicines that I was taking, and I'm going back to my lifelong tradition of just a more holistic approach. So, forgive that personal digression, but this is really interesting. Marco and Annunziata. Fascinating guy, Italian, obviously from that name, but he worked in London for a number of years at UniCredit Group and now at GE. And on that note, I think I've covered the main points. Bond markets quietly steady, gave up some of the early gains that were achieved when Wall Street was a little weaker than it wound up. Precious metals, quietly steady. Here, consolidating. Silver actually up on the day. And silver's very much in form within that sector. But overall, it's an impressive support, impressive performance by all of them. And on that note, folks, all the very best.